All right. Officially, we've been told to wait till 11:10 to start. I guess the keynote ran long. That's great. Hopefully, you enjoyed it. But I figured we'd just chat a little bit. I hate to see everybody just sitting in the room for another 10 minutes doing nothing. It can't be terribly exciting. So I figured we'd fill the 10 minutes with just a little bit of chatting, share a few things. So my name is Brian Harry. Welcome. I'll introduce myself again when I officially start the talk. This is Brian Keller. So this is going to be the Brian's talk. So hopefully, you know, I showed you some stuff in the keynote. Hopefully you enjoyed that. We're going to show you a lot more stuff in this session, both in a lot more detail and just a bunch more stuff. We've got a bunch of stuff going into Visual Studio 2013 and Team Foundation Server 2013. You know, it's funny, I was watching tweets this morning after my announcements, and, you know, I saw one that said, sort of declaring how amazing it was that there was so much stuff in Visual Studio 2013, despite all of the updates that we did to Visual Studio 2012. And, you know, that has been an interesting process for us, trying to figure out how to divide our effort, how much goes into kind of those updates versus how much we kind of do at sort of big announcements like this at big events. You know, I think that's something we'll evolve over time. But
are we getting are we getting some feedback? I think there's just a little feedback up here. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear a little squeak.
Yeah.
All right. And you know, so the interesting thing is, you know, today, both in the keynote and now, in this session, really all we're talking about is the application lifecycle management features, which is really probably only about half that we're delivering in 2013. So at the Build conference later this month, you know, we'll do a similarly large set of Visual Studio announcements, but about completely different things, all about our construction tools and you know, Windows 8.1 development tools and Azure development tools and sort of all of our platform-focused development experiences will be announced then. And today we talk about the lifecycle stuff. So stay tuned. Still got a little bit of an echo, but stay tuned for more. There's going to be a lot of announcements. So it's pretty exciting. Other than that, you know, if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to take a few questions while we're waiting. We have about 7 minutes. If somebody's got something from the keynote that they'd like to ask me, there's mics right here. Feel free to pop up and ask me something. I've seen a bunch of questions on Twitter. There's going to be even some ALM stuff that we are, and on my blog, that we're doing that we're not even going to talk about in this session. So one of the questions I've already seen this morning that made me go, dang, I wish we'd included it in this session, was about Build. There was a question about, are we improving, that the, you know, our Build automation uses Windows workflow, and those workflows are big and complicated. Are we doing any work to simplify it? And although we're not going to talk about it in this session, the answer is yes. There's a new Build template for TFS 2012 that dramatically reduces the complexity of the workflow template. It makes it just a huge amount easier to customize it. And then in a subsequent version, probably one of the 2013 updates, we'll be adding some Build customization tooling that doesn't require you to use the general purpose workflow editor, but rather more of a Build step editor that will be easier for people to customize. There'll still be a workflow underneath, and you know your builds will be compatible. You can still use all your custom workflow tasks. You can still drop down to the power of editing kind of the full fidelity workflow. But, you know, for simple Build customizations, that's a bit over the top in terms of the complexity. So that's one of many things that we're not going to actually get a chance to talk about today. You know, we've got an hour session that is just going to be jam-packed with demos of stuff that we're delivering. The other thing I wanted to mention, because I didn't get a chance to really talk about it too much in the keynote, is we've got this thing called Team Foundation Service, which is our online version of these capabilities, and that is it is up, and most of the stuff that I showed on the keynote, at least the TFS oriented stuff, is online and available today. We threw all the feature switches this morning, so Team Room is up there if you want to go play with it. The Agile Project Management stuff is up there. The load test service is actually up there too. It's just you need a new client in order to be able to use it. So once we release the new client later this month, you'll be able to try out the load test service. Trying to think, what else did I show today?
One thing to mention is that the preview will have a go live license
with it.
So if you want to use that in production, we'd be excited to get your feedback on that.
Yeah, that was another blog question I had this morning was, hey, we're planning to upgrade to TFS 2012 this summer. When is 2013 coming out and should we wait? And, you know, my answer was, you know, given that we're now shipping every 3 months, there's no perfect time. You can't just say, hey, because you'll always be waiting. There'll always be something you want in the next update. And you can't just wait. So you've got to just pick and go. And a couple things that I added were, one, we're working hard to keep the upgrade process smooth. So that upgrading often is not the end of the world. Very little downtime, very easy to do the upgrade. That's something we've been working on a lot over the TFS 2012 update process. Update 1 had a bunch of improvements. Update 2 had a bunch of improvements. Update 3 has more improvements, and we'll continue in that vein.
I'd be curious, how many people are on TFS 2010 still? Show of hands. Okay. How many have made the jump to 2012? All right. And how many are on the latest TFS 2012 Update 2? All right. Good show of hands. Anybody using Team Foundation Service? Great.
Cool. And then the other thing I said, which was what Brian said a moment ago, that the preview later this month will be go live. We are using it in our production servers, and we expect that some of our customers will choose to take the early plunge and go ahead and go to TFS 2013 early. It is, of course, a preview, and I do expect there are some bugs in it that we will find that haven't been fixed yet, and we'll find them and fix them. So as with any preview, there's always some risk, but it's an option for people. It is go live. We will support upgrades from that to the final RTM. We will support you if you have issues. So that's an option for people. Okay. Do you have a question? Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. So the question was, hey, can I make a statement about the use of Team Foundation Service for industries with high security requirements? And, this gets into dicey ground into exactly what I can and can't say, because I can't be making legal representations. But in general, I would say it's probably still a little early for anything that's in that vein. We are currently working on our certifications, so ISO 27001 and a bunch of that. So I'm expecting that sometime over the next, I don't know exactly the time frame, 6 months, 9 months, we'll be getting through our certification process, and then I'll be able to answer that question a little more affirmatively and say, hey, we've dotted all our I's and crossed all our T's, that we're good. At the same time, we endeavor to run the service in a very secure way with a high degree of privacy. So we certainly do everything that we can to ensure that your data is safe and protected. But we don't have all our certifications yet, so something to think about. Okay, I think it is 11:10, so let's get started.
Great.
All right, so that was just, for those of you who walked in, we were just filling a little bit of time since they asked us to wait due to the keynote running long. All right, so I'm Brian Harry, and I'm responsible for sort of developer services in Microsoft, in Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, Team Foundation Service, MSDN, CodePlex, kind of all of our online services, and here to talk to you today about our application lifecycle management stuff. And with me is Brian Keller.
And I'm Brian Keller. I'm the technical evangelist that gets to show off all the great stuff that Brian's team builds.
Great. All right, so we've got some slides, but I'm going to try to make the slides fast because really I want to spend as much time as we can on demos. Demos is I think, going to be the fun part of this. So I'm going to start, though, with talking a little bit about release cadence. And in the preamble, I talked a little bit about this, but I want to go a little deeper. So, you know, after Visual Studio 2012, we began this sort of continuous flow of value, continuous update model. And we shipped update one, formerly called Visual Studio 2012.1, in November. We shipped update two, I think the 1st of April. Update three is within a small number of weeks of being done and shipping. And we've introduced a ton of value in those updates. And you know, there were a variety of reasons for why we went to that update model. One is just generally being more responsive to customers, addressing customer feedback and issues in a more timely manner than making people wait a year or two. And we've tried hard to prioritize specific customer feedback in those updates. Another one of the motivations is, about 2 years ago now, we started our journey towards having an online service, Team Foundation Service. And we knew that as we built out capabilities on the service, we were going to need client updates to be able to take advantage of those capabilities. So one of the motivations was to have a vehicle in which we could deliver those and stay up to date with the service. Now, the service we ship every 3 weeks. So we use an agile sort of development approach. We use 3 week sprints. And at the end of every sprint, we ship whatever features were built that sprint. Now, some of them will hide behind feature flags, so they'll be out there and they won't be visible, but they'll be deployed. And in fact, everything that we turned on today has been deployed for weeks, and we've had early adopters giving us feedback on them, and then today we switched to what we call feature flags, and boom, they turn on and the whole world gets access to them. But we ship every 3 weeks. We knew we couldn't ship a Visual Studio client every 3 weeks, and quite honestly, you wouldn't want a new Visual Studio client every 3 weeks, or for that matter, a new on-premises Team Foundation server every 3 weeks. That's, God forbid. But we needed a vehicle, and we sort of settled on, we've sort of approximated every 3 to 4 months is what we've done this cycle. Whether or not that exactly holds the same cadence into the future, I don't know, but that's kind of roughly what we did this time. And now, further, we shipped Visual Studio 2012, in August of last year? And, now we're already announcing that Visual Studio 2013 will be later this year. No months. Please don't ask me because I can't tell you because there's somebody over there who will hold a gun to my head and shoot me if I do. You can raise your hand, Nicole. It's order a year, right? It's consecutive years. Wow, somebody switched that for me. They want me to move on. Excellent. So that's sort of cadence. As we think about what we're doing going forward, we started a set of work in 2012 that we're going to continue. There's been some important evolving trends over the last 5 years or so around cloud and the how much cloud is affecting kind of the kinds of computing experience people are expecting. They're expecting their data to be available wherever they are. They're expecting their apps on every device. Social, we see social sort of integrating everywhere, sort of all of my apps. You see Twitter integration and all kinds of stuff in all over my life, Facebook integration. The sort of touch and modern app experience is another important trend. And, we delivered a bunch of value in VS 2012 that was sort of fundamentally saying, hey, in this modern world, you've got to be able to build, you got to be able to react to feedback quickly. That sort of the pace of change, whether it's business change or technology change, is just so fast that you've got to be able to adapt quickly. And in fact, you know, there was a book written a few years ago called The Lean Startup, which popularized this notion of build, measure, learn, and this idea that, you know, you get an idea, and you don't know if it's a good idea or not. You can either spend a whole bunch of time, you know, testing that idea and focus groups and all kinds of stuff and refining it, or you can just put out the idea, get some people using it, see what kind of feedback they have, and react. And while, you know, that sort of the extreme of that methodology is not appropriate for all kinds of apps, all kinds of groups, all kinds of, you know, all kinds of organizations, the general approach of iterate rapidly, build something, get it out there, get some feedback, build the next increment, works really well, and we really believe it's an important part of the future of software development. So what I want to do is talk about some of the capabilities that we're going to deliver in Visual Studio and TFS 2013 in the context of sort of speeding up that loop, helping you move through that cycle as quickly as possible. So let's talk a bit about plan. And I'm going to demo the Agile project management stuff. Oh, thank you, Brian. That I did in the keynote and the team room, but in a little more depth, because I want to show a little bit more of the capabilities. Oops. Sorry.
It's not switching over. Can we get some AV help? Yeah, I'm pushing 7.
Well,
it was working earlier.
Yes, it was. We even tested it.
We did test it, so we're going to file a bug there.
All right. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We needed an expert. All right. So I talked a little bit about sort of the Agile project management tools that we introduced in TFS 2012. So let's talk, I want to drill a little bit more, particularly on some of the updates we've made since TFS 2012. So, you know, I've got for my team a backlog that enables me to manage and prioritize my work. I can, you know, I can easily drag and drop to set the priority. I can also easily add new items like, say, support Windows 8. So it's super easy to add items to my backlog. I can open it up and... you know, maybe I'll assign that to me and put in an effort. And we also added this feature in Update 2 called Tags that is a super simple way to kind of customize my work items without having to deal with the process template. So in this case, I want to create a new tag called, you know, Windows 8. And that's all I have to do is type it, and now I have a new tag called Windows 8, and you'll see it right here. Associated with that work item. And then I can open up my tags filtering capability and be able to, for example, filter things that are just Windows 8, or maybe I want to filter things that are just Windows Phone. I can add multiple tags if I want to do the things that are Windows Phone and iPhone. So a super sort of simple, fluid ability to customize your work items and then query/filter them.
And the best part about that is you didn't have to make any changes to the process template. So those of you that are TFS admins and someone comes to you and says, hey, we need this custom way of tagging our work items, no work required for you guys.
Yep. So the other thing, you know, that I talked about is kind of the next sort of problem that we're tackling is how do we scale this to larger organizations? Large organizations can have many teams sort of collaborating together on a common set of capabilities. Each team's got their own backlog. They prioritize it separately. Sort of how do we manage that? And what we've done is added this notion of hierarchy. Now, you know, when I showed the keynote demo, we had, it shows features, which I showed, and backlog items. Now, you can customize that. So if you want to use business value and scenarios and user stories, you can do that. It's just work item types. You can customize it and make it be whatever you want. But what this allows me to do is kind of have that high-level notion, which then I can drill down into to see the how everything lines up in there. I have my tags. I have what teams it's associated with. We also added just recently the ability to look at, so it'll be part of our TFS 2013, and it's live on the service now, the ability to go back and look at past iterations. So it used to be you could only do the current iteration, but now you can go back and you can get the backlog, you can look at the board for any iterations, past or present. And then going back to the individual team, another thing I wanted to show, which is pretty cool, in terms of that traceability, I showed you.
Go home.
Yeah, thanks.
Backlog.
There we go. Thanks. I showed you, that ability to break down features into backlog items or user stories. So here I am in my team, and I'm looking at my little subset of backlog items that are for me. I'd like to be able to see that in the context of the features. So in fact, I can go pivot this and go up rather than down. The other one, I started with features and I drilled down. I can do the other way, look at my little back items and look up and say, show me how my work aligns with the different higher level features. Further, when I drill down, if there were, say, another team that contributes to my backlog items, then I'll see their tasks in my board. So I can see how people are helping deliver work, towards areas that I own. So kind of a nice ability to pivot up and down from the various levels. All right. So that covers...
Want to show Kanban?
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks. So Kanban boards, of course, I can show at any level. So I'm going to show a Kanban board of the backlog items. I can also show a Kanban board of the features, which my team doesn't have any of those. They're at the Uber team. And there's the Kanban board of the higher level features. So kind of at each level in the hierarchy, you can have a Kanban board that monitors or manages the flow through that. And each one has the cumulative flow diagram. So there's the cumulative flow diagram for the features. There's the cumulative flow diagram for the user stories. And then, of course, in the sprint, I get my burn down for the sprint. So kind of get the right level of detail for the right level. All right, so that's kind of the Agile project management stuff, Agile portfolio management stuff. I want to go show you a little bit more about Team Room. So I introduced this notion of Team Room. Team Room, I sort of said, was a durable record of what's happening in the team. So when I look at this, you can see there's changes to work items, there's check-ins, there's code reviews, there's builds, so I can click in on a build and go look at what happened in this build. So this was a build that partially succeeded. Here's the failures. Looks like I had a test case failure. And, so not only is it a place where you can chat and we'll see kind of what other people on your team have to say, it's this place where all the activity is recorded. So let's take another example. I can go look at a check-in and immediately go to the actual changes that occurred. And, I might have, I showed you, or I didn't, I'll show you the lightweight code commenting capability that allows me directly from here to say, so sort of directly get to the code change. So as you're sort of doing your work and you're watching activity, you can drill into whether it's a work item update or it's a code change or a build. We make it super easy for you to drill into those artifacts and then interact with them. Let me go back to the team room. And here you can see Brian seems to be getting hungry. So the next thing I want to show is, so by default, every team in Team Foundation Server gets a team room. So you know, your team gets a team room and your team gets a team room that is the collaboration space for your team. But in this case, you know, Brian and I, we want to have our own little private collaboration space. So I'm going to go create the Brian room. And now we've got our own little room. And of course, to be able to do something, to be able to let Brian chat with me, I need to add the other Brian to the team room so I can easily manage the membership of my team room. Okay, so Brian's in it. And also, I can control what events that I want to see in my team room. So I can control what builds that I want to see show up. I might only want to see my team, you know, a specific set of build definitions. What code changes, so I only want to see check-ins to certain areas or from certain people. Work items I can filter, code reviews I can filter. So this allows me to sort of manage what content gets into my team room so that I can control how much noise there is.
And that will be extensible too. So if you want to write your own plugins, maybe tap into the Domino's pizza tracker, you could do that.
So all of this uses the standard REST service hook mechanism. So you can hook up anything that can fire REST service hooks into this and capture events from anything else that's happening in your organization or your team. All right, so I think that covers, can I switch back? Which one is it? Is it one?
I think
it's two.
Two? Maybe one.
We'll find out, won't we? Yep, it was one. All right, so that's sort of that. So I showed you the Agile portfolio management, I showed you customization, work item tagging, and I've actually even jumped ahead to the development phase and showed you some of the team room stuff. All right, so sort of the next sort of set of activities we're going to talk about is kind of the day-to-day development, and Brian's going to take that away and show you some demos there.
Sure, if we could go back to 7. So I thought I'd spend some time showing you kind of a day in the life of the developer. And what I thought I'd start with is just an empty Visual Studio 2013 environment. So here you can see over on the right-hand side, we have our Team Explorer that everyone's probably familiar with. You can see we've added a little bit of color over here, nice little facelift. And you'll notice that the first thing I'm prompted to do is actually just go ahead and configure your workspace mapping. So this is something that we didn't always make easy for you in the past, but we've tried to improve that experience. And so now when I go connect to that team project, we're going to obviously map your workspaces and get all of your code down for you, but we're also going to go one step further. So you'll see down here in the lower right, we're actually enumerating all of the solution files for you. So just to try to give you at your fingertips everything you need to jump in and get started.
This has been something I've wanted to do for years.
So from there, I'll just go ahead and launch one of these solutions. And I wanted to go back and show you a little bit more of that heads-up display that we were looking at earlier in Brian's keynote demo. You know, Team Foundation Server has a lot of really rich information. And what we're doing now is we're starting to index that information for you, if I can find the right file here. We're starting to index that information for you. And just like if you're a fighter jet pilot or if you're playing Halo, you kind of get this extra heads-up display in the background. We want to give that to you as a developer so that as you're managing and maintaining these complex code bases, Team Foundation Server will help you with a lot of this additional information. So you'll see that when I started in here, we started to populate at the top just these little gray indicators. And I can actually get more indicators by first opening up the test window, and then from there, building my project. So if you've used Visual Studio 2012, you maybe have already played around with the Test Explorer, which is the single harness for me to see all of my unit tests, my coded UI tests. You can actually get third-party unit testing adapters for frameworks like XUnit and InUnit. And here what we've done is we've discovered all of my tests. I'll just run all of those tests now. And what we'll do is we'll actually, on each method, go through and give you a nice little indication about whether or not that particular method, number one, has any code that references it. So down here you can see that I have two tests that reference this particular block of code. And then if I mouse over that, I can actually just run all these tests again straight from within that code information indicator.
What if I don't like taking my hands off the keyboard? I'm a dev. I don't
You're
like
a dev, so you can hold down Alt and you can press, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you can just pop right in there. So there I can see the last few people to change this code, and then I can double click on that as well. And that'll show me that particular change set, and I can understand exactly what happened last to this block of code. And we have a lot more ideas for things that we would like to do that in the code information indicators. So TFS has a wealth of information, and so you can expect to see this light up in the future over time.
Yeah, imagine things like code complexity and things like that that we could lay in here. Imagine the back end being able to do increasingly sophisticated static analysis, increasingly sophisticated analysis of your code, and then present all of that to you in the heads-up display.
Definitely. Another thing that I want to show you is a feature we call peak definition. If you're like me and you pick up a piece of code that's new to you or you haven't looked at in a while, you'll just find yourself going to definition over and over and over again and trying to drill in and understand exactly what the code is doing. We wanted to make that a little bit easier, so now if you place your cursor on a symbol and press Alt F12, it'll just open up this inline feature we call peak definition. Just make it a lot easier. Obviously, if I had another monitor, I can dock this somewhere else, and it just becomes really nice for trying to understand that code that I'm looking at. Another thing that we've done is we've pulled forward a lot of the power tools from previous releases of Visual Studio directly into the development environment. So if you're not familiar with the power tools give us a nice way to kind of, you know, ship some code out there and kind of build, measure, learn, get some feedback on it. And so we've taken the feedback from you about which power tools you like the most. And so, for example, this scroll bar indicators is something that I can turn on now. And so I can actually just change my scroll bar so that I see this visual representation of my code over here. It's just kind of nice to browse up and down. Another thing you can do is you can select a block of code, just press Alt up just to move that around. And notice, of course, I broke that code, and now you get this visual indicator further down in the scroll bar that tells me that's where you have a broken block of code. Now, another thing that is difficult to appreciate, some of you in the front row might have noticed, is that in the upper right-hand corner, notice that Visual Studio now knows who I am. This is a connected IDE experience, and so I have the option of actually authenticating into my Microsoft account and saying that this Visual Studio environment is mine. And so somewhere, as I'm making changes to my environment, one of the first features we lit up is roaming settings. So somewhere in Seattle, as I'm making changes to, say, the way that the scroll bar indicators is working, it's actually updating my Visual Studio desktop back at the office. So you can, of course, turn that off, but we wanted to make it really easy for you to change things and get Visual Studio to be exactly the way that you want it and roam those settings from one place to another. And that's just the foundation. Once we know who you are, we feel like there's a lot of other areas that we can start to personalize your Visual Studio experience and just make it easier and easier for you to get into things like Team Foundation Service, which also expects a Microsoft account. So if we already know who you are, that's just one less dialogue for you to click through. Let's see. The next thing I'd like to show you is how we've started to embrace Git directly in Visual Studio from a client tooling perspective and in Team Foundation Server. So a few months ago, Brian announced that on Team Foundation Service, we added Git as a source control option for projects up on the service. Now with Team Foundation Server on premises with 2013, you'll be able to create Git-based projects as well. And this is really nice because what we've done is we've tried to give you all the flexibility of DVCS by giving you Git without sacrificing the integrated ALM capabilities of Team Foundation Server. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that we can give you Git directly within Team Foundation Server, and you can still link that over to work items. You can still trace that all the way over to your builds. All of those features that you expect to work with Team Foundation version control, we're lighting up to work with Git as well. And I'll just show you a quick example of that. So if I connect back to my project here, I can create a new team project. We'll call it my Git project. Notice here that I can still choose between the traditional centralized TF version control and Git. And that's going to create my team project. Now, I want to emphasize that this is not a special implementation of Git that Microsoft created. We're partnering with the open source community around Git, and what you see here is the same Git implementation that you'll see out on GitHub or Bitbucket or a local Git repository. The other thing that we've done, as you'll see in a minute, is we've actually given you first-class tooling for working with Git repositories directly from within Visual Studio. So whether you're connecting to a local repository, or to Bitbucket, or to Team Foundation Service, or now to Team Foundation Server 2013, we're going to give you those tools at your fingertips so that you have a nice UI for working with that.
Yeah, so a couple things, you know, to sort of highlight the fact that it's just Git. You can use our Git client against any Git service. So you could use it against GitHub, you could use it against Bitbucket, you could use it against, or sorry, Stash. You could use it against any of the Git services out there. And our Git server, you can use any of the Git clients for. It's just standard Git protocol. There's nothing special about it. But we have done ALM integration layered over top of that.
So I have my Git repository on the service. I'm just going to clone that down to my local machine here. And now I can start working locally. So if I create a new project here, create a phone project,
the other thing I want to highlight is we've built a bridge between Team Foundation version control and Git. So we've got this thing called GitTF, which enables you to use Team Foundation Server centralized version control as your sort of shared version control repository, and yet still have people use Git locally. This is particularly important for teams that maybe have some iOS developers that want to use Xcode, and Xcode only is going to support Git. Android Studio is another one that's going to support Git, and this gives you a way to do that and hook up with Team Foundation version control, or you can just create a Git repo on Team Foundation version or on Team Foundation server. And sorry, one more point. The other thing which I wanted to make sure we were clear about is this is on the service today and will ship as part of TFS 2013. So it will be available on-premises. You'll be able to host Git repos on your on-premises TFS server with TFS 2013.
That's right. So I've created my project for the first time. Now if I pop over to changes, you'll see the typical pending changes window. But for those of you that use Visual Studio 2012 today, you're going to like this. This actually is going to work with both TF version control and Git projects. Check this out. I can now pop out the pending changes dialog. That was one of our number one feature requests. So hopefully you guys, thank you.
It was the number one feature request.
Yes.
on User Voice. And you know, you can put that tool window anywhere. You could just have it on another monitor somewhere and have your changes always up. It's just a tool window that you can do anything with.
That's right. And so I'll just give a comment here. We'll do my initial check-in. Why isn't it?
You have to configure your username.
You know, I just did that. Did I not save it?
I don't know. Click the configure button again. Oh, you got it right there. Got it.
Try that again. There we go. And we'll go ahead and commit this. And what's interesting here is we're actually committing locally. So if I'm on an airplane and I'm working on my project and I want to commit that in multiple times, I can do that, no problem. We'll just make one more change here. And, you know, Brian is a farmer, if you read his blogs. So he's always losing track of his cows. So we'll just create a cow tracker application for him and save that.
Nothing like a call at 1 o'clock in the morning from the sheriff letting you know that your cows are out in the middle of the road.
Yeah, exactly.
True story.
And there you can see it picked up my changes, changed labels, and we'll commit. So at this point, that's another local commit. When I'm ready to actually push that to my central TFS repository, I can just move into the commits here. And all I need to do is say sync. And what it's going to do is take those changes that I just made, and it's going to sequentially check those in. So I'm still preserving all of that history from the interim changes that I checked in. And in fact, if I go pop over to web access, you'll see that here. So if I go to the code window and move over to history, you'll notice that all of my check-ins are there. Actually, another thing while I'm in here, it's kind of nice that within the web browser, you actually see all of the check-in comments, and those will just show up for you. So you can see right here the difference between those individual check-ins. So that's pretty nice. So that's Git right within Team Foundation Server. And you know, again, fear not, we're not abandoning Team Foundation version control. It's the same team. They're working together to make sure that these features light up in both types of scenarios. The next thing that I'll do is actually go in a little deeper into the cloud-based load testing scenario that we showed you earlier in the keynote. How many people have done load testing from Visual Studio in the past? A few of you? Great. So for those of you that have worked with load testing in the past, you've probably had to go through the process of setting up your own test rig on premises in order to generate concurrent load against your web application. And you can continue to do that. That's continued. That will be continued to be supported within Visual Studio. But as Brian said in the keynote, we thought that that was the perfect scenario to take advantage of the cloud. And so with Team Foundation Service, we're going to let you take those web tests and actually upload those as a load test to Team Foundation Service. So I'm just going to connect to my Team Foundation Service account, and we'll create a web test from scratch here. Oops, not a coded UI test. And web load tests are generally comprised of what are called web performance tests. And so I'll just record a really quick web performance test here. We will try to DDoS Microsoft.com and see what happens. And what happens here is it's actually capturing the traffic in the background at the HTTP layer. Another option you have if you want to record, say, a mobile application is you can open up like the Windows Phone emulator and you can launch Fiddler in the background. It can capture the HTTP traffic for you and you can straight from Fiddler convert that into a web performance test. We'll just record a basic test for now and we'll say stop, and that will convert our test into a declarative test right within Visual Studio. If you want to, you can even convert this into a coded test, so you can take advantage of really interesting things like data binding and running interesting loops through your test. But for now, we'll just keep it basic. My colleague Darshan is going to have a session later this afternoon. It's the first one after lunch. He'll go into a lot more detail around web performance and load tests. But here you can see that my test passed. What I can do now is just create a new load test. And usually, you would create a load test with multiple web performance tests. So if I'm Amazon.com, maybe I want to have 10% of my users that are creating new accounts, 80% that are shopping, and then 10% that are checking out. We'll keep it basic for now. You can define how you want to step up your load. So we can say that every few seconds, we want to increase the user load. That's a nice way to see when my application starts to fall over. And there's a lot of options in here for how you actually simulate your load. One of the things that you can do is run network emulation. So if you want to simulate what happens when people are on 3G networks, a certain percentage of clients, you can emulate that. You can change the browser headers. So if you're using a page that renders dynamically based on the type of the incoming header request, you can change it here and simulate a different mix. But for now, we'll just go ahead and finish this. And the only other thing I'm going to do is change my test setting here to run these tests using Team Foundation Service. We'll kick off that load. It's now going to package up my tests. It's going to provision this out in the cloud. We're taking advantage of a PaaS infrastructure to do this. It's going to figure out how many agents are needed to complete this run. And then once this runs queued and it starts hitting Microsoft.com, that data will start streaming back to me so I can see exactly how Microsoft.com is performing under load. And you can use this really to hit any application that has a public-facing internet address. So whether that's running in Windows Azure, or whether it's an on-premises web server that you have somewhere that's publicly accessible, any of that traffic can be captured and then replayed.
And in the preview that's up there now, and you'll be able to use once you get the client later this month, we're gonna limit how large of a load test you can run for now. After all, it is free, and we only have so many machines we can pay for. So you'll be able to run a single agent worth of load, which is quite a lot, but that'll be it. We will have an early adopter program for people who want to do very high scale load and sort of test out the service and see how it works. So if you're interested in trying some very high scale load runs, let us know, and we'll look at the possibility of getting you added to the early adopter program.
And so we can let this load finish, but we'll go ahead and close that and jump into something else. If you've ever had to analyze a memory leak, you'll really appreciate what I'm going to show you next. With Visual Studio 2013, we're going to be releasing a memory analyzer for .NET code. And so what I can do, and in fact, the way that I generated these memory dumps was just by using the built-in creation of dump files straight from the task manager within Windows Server. And I earlier ran a load test to actually simulate lots of users hitting my website. And so I took a before dump and an after dump. And what I'll do is I'll just open up the after file. And this is going to open up in Visual Studio 2013, and you'll see this new option over here that allows you to debug managed memory. And so here, if I open up debug managed memory, it's going to stream all the symbols that are required for me to understand which objects are in memory at this time.
We use this capability on Team Foundation Service all the time. You know, it's amazing how often and how easily you can introduce a leak into your system and not even know it.
And so here you can see a snapshot of all of the objects that are on the heap at this particular time. So I have a lot of objects in here. But what I'd really like to understand is the leak. So I need to look at kind of a before snapshot as a baseline. So what I'll do is I'll just select my baseline. And now what it's going to do is diff the two files.
And you can use this tool on your development machine as you're doing development, or you can take snapshots out of your production environment and diagnose where all your memory is going in production.
That's right. And so now I'm getting a really detailed view here. So you can see that what's happening is I'm leaking these customer objects, and you can see that that's certainly contributing to a pretty huge memory leak here. So that gives me a clue of where I need to dive in. It's too early in the morning to actually fix a memory leak in my application, but you get the idea of how you might be able to use this.
Very cool. All right. So where did I put the clicker? There we go.
Back to one.
So as you can see, so we talked about plan and some cool stuff we've done there. Brian just did a great demo of a ton of stuff we're doing for developers. So sort of at every phase, doing what we can to improve that sort of productivity and that speed through the cycle, showing both sort of abilities that help during sort of the coding phase and also during production diagnostics. So let's talk a little bit about... All right, come on. Let's talk about release. So as I said in the keynote, what I hear from developers all the time is, we've adopted, some form of Agile. Not everybody practices Scrum exactly, but, we've evolved our development practices over the last several years. And, we're feeling good about our ability to innovate and iterate and develop software quickly. But we hit this brick wall when it's time to go into production. That the operations team still operates with fairly rigid policies and practices, and it just doesn't compose well with what the development teams do. And so we had this movement over the last 10 years, the Agile movements that really revisited the way developers worked. And there's a new movement evolving now called DevOps, which I think of kind of the next generation of that. It recognizes that we created an impedance mismatch between the way developers worked and the way the production environment was managed. And DevOps is around fixing that impedance mismatch and trying to figure out how to enable us to get that smooth, reliable, repeatable flow through the entire system to get code from the developer desktop into the production environment as quickly as possible. So Brian's going to walk you through some demos showing how we think we can help you do that in 2013.
That's right. So as Brian announced in the keynote, we are really excited that we've reached an agreement to acquire a piece of technology called InRelease. This is from a company called InCycle. They're actually here. They have a booth presence, so I invite you to go talk to them this week to learn more about this. But I'll just show you a quick piece of their tooling here. And why we really love this tooling is that they've built it on top of TFS, and they've deeply integrated it with TFS. So if you're using TFS, this is a great release management system for you. And so here you can see that if I switch over to my apps, I can actually define various apps that I might be managing. So maybe one is my e-commerce site, I've got a call center, whatever apps you might be managing. And then from there, you can define declarative workflows that define what happens as you move from one environment to another. So as I move across from dev to QA to production, we can define different workflows. And the important thing is that we can build these workflows in partnership with the operations team. So this isn't some rogue process. This is something where everyone comes together in a DevOps lifecycle to really make sure that we reach an agreement about how we're going to push this code out.
And these workflows can be as simple or as complicated as you want. So if you're just a small agile dev team and you want to have continuous integration, continuous deployment, every check-in automatically updates my test server, great, it works that way. You can do that. If you want to have a more formal handoff with some sign-off processes, it's going to help you do that too.
That's right. And so over here on the left-hand side, you can see a list of some of the toolbox controls that come with InRelease. And so, for example, Scott Guthrie was showing how you can take advantage of Azure IaaS for dev and test environments. And so if I wanted to, for example, provision a VM in Azure, spin up my website over there, push out my database, and then if I wanted to then take a bunch of tests that I may have created within Team Foundation Server using Microsoft Test Manager and run those tests against that environment and then shut down that environment once I'm done, it's really easy to get in here and configure that. Another thing that you can do, I mentioned the partnership between dev and ops. And oftentimes, if you just say, hey, we're going to push straight to production from development, a lot of people look at you sideways. But what you can do is you can set up these approval workflows so that everybody has a stake in the game. And so, for example, when the QA team signs off on a particular release, then the operations team gets a notification saying that QA signed off on it, and it's now up to the operations team to push that out to production if and when they're ready. And so one way of viewing that is just a new web-based dashboard that's here. And so I can open up this dashboard. I can select one of these releases that's in QA. This is what Brian did this morning. I can say, you know what, this release, we're going to sign off on it past all of our load testing. And we'll approve this. And that will now, of course, kick off a notification. And then the operations team is ready to push that out.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. All right, so you've talked about planning, talked about development, talked about release. Sort of the next thing is operate. So once that thing is in production and it's working, what happens? Errors, failures, bugs, stuff happens. This is life. And the only way to deal with that, you can try to eliminate every possible bug that could ever happen in your production environment, and you could fail. Or you could figure out how to develop a process and a set of tooling and a way of working that helps you identify issues in production quickly, get to the root cause, and fix them. Now, we've been talking about this for a little while. We've had IntelliTrace in production for a while. We're adding the memory analysis this time. We've got some very nice integration with System Center to be able to help that collaboration between the production operations team and the development team to be able to hand issues back and forth. It's all about developing a set of tools and processes to be able to get that root cause with as little interruption to production as you possibly can. So I'm going to hand it back over to Brian. He's going to walk us through the next set of demos.
Okay, so we're looking at our friends Fabricam, and these poor guys at Fabricam, they've got so many production issues going on. So if I just click over to this reports node, you'll notice that we're going to get an exception that's thrown here. And luckily for Fabricam, they have the good insights to actually start monitoring their production systems using System Center Operations Manager. Once it spins up here, it's the problem with having like 8 VMs. I feel like a DJ spinning a bunch of turntables up here. Okay. And the exception.
Your VM is tired.
It is tired, yes. It needs some lunch. Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
There okay, so there's my exception. You don't have to clap for an exception. But what's interesting here is that we're actually capturing these events in System Center Operations Manager. So I realize most of the folks in this room, you're probably developers, you don't work on SCOM, but SCOM is a tool that a lot of IT professionals use to monitor the health of applications. And one of the things that we really wanted to do to help bridge this dev and ops gap was to make sure that when something goes bump in the night over in SCOM, and I take this alert and assign it over to the engineering team, we're automatically going to package up all the information that SCOM knows about that alert, send it over to TFS, and make it easy for you as a developer to open that up and start getting your hands dirty trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And so if I go back over to Visual Studio here, I've actually already assigned this to engineering earlier. And so you can see all the information that SCOM already knows about this application. There's some interesting stuff in here. So if I open up this particular link, there's this thing called an application performance monitoring event that happens over in SCOM. And so we'll be able to get a snapshot of that and be able to get kind of a single frame stack trace of what's going on over there.
Yes, this is a new feature. For a while now, we've had integration with SCOM so that if an exception happens in your production environment, we can capture the stack trace and all of that stuff and send it over to TFS. But we've just added the ability to do that for performance events as well. So you can set a performance threshold in SCOM that says if a request takes longer than a certain amount of time, then capture the same information and we can ferry that over. So you can handle both reliability and performance issues.
And so here you can see a little bit of that information coming in from SCOM. And another thing that we did earlier this year in partnership with the System Center team, they shipped System Center 2012 SP1. And with that update, we actually started turning these types of application performance events into IntelliTrace files. And so for those of you that use IntelliTrace, you know that one of the capabilities IntelliTrace gives you is the ability to go straight from an interesting event back into source code. So here you can see that I have this null reference exception, and it goes straight back into the line of code, and it automatically matches the source and symbols for you, assuming that you're archiving that as part of your build definition. For those of you that have used IntelliTrace, though, you'll notice that over on the right-hand side, we're only getting a single frame of an event. And so if I want, I can also go back to the operations team now and ask them to create a full-fledged IntelliTrace file that shows multiple frames of events. Because I may look at this and say, yes, we're getting a null reference exception, but how did we get there? And so Brian mentioned that we have IntelliTrace capabilities in production. One option, if you're not running System Center, is you can actually run this using a PowerShell command, but we've also built this right into the SCOM environment as well. So if I say start collecting IntelliTrace, it's actually going to reset the application pool, and it's going to take my ASP.NET application, and it's going to rejit that application, and right within the MSIL, it's going to embed all the mechanisms that we need to capture interesting events. Now, what's an interesting event? Well, if you're running a web application, every time you render an ASP.NET request, you're probably doing stuff with ADO.NET in the background. You probably have exceptions that are being thrown and caught. Those are all interesting events that IntelliTrace can capture for you, and you can go back in time and you can say, what was the state of the stack at the time that we encountered this particular event? So now it's just refreshing here. It's rejetting my application. We'll repro that issue so that we're guaranteed that we have all the necessary information in my IntelliTrace file. There we go. And now if I go back to SCOM, this is probably not something that I want to run on my production server all the time. So I'll just collect that snapshot, and I'll turn off IntelliTrace once this is finished.
And as you said, that's collecting a full log of everything that your app was doing while that was recording.
That's right. And the really nice thing about that is because I already had this event, this incident that I started for the engineering team, when I captured that information, it automatically packaged it up and attached it to that same work item. So if I go back and stop debugging, we can actually refresh that original work item. And with any luck, it will send that over in a second. These things always run faster at 3 o'clock in the morning when you rehearse them. Maybe we'll come back to that in a minute. The other thing that I did want to show you is a new type of IntelliTrace viewing experience that we're lighting up with Visual Studio 2013. And so here you can see a web request that was generated, and we captured basically a slow web request, and we captured an IntelliTrace file off of that. And if you've ever used the profiling capabilities of earlier editions of Visual Studio, you're familiar with this concept of hot pathing, where you can kind of drill in and understand which parts of your code are taking the longest time to execute. And we can do the same thing now straight from your applications that might be running in production. So here you can see up top, we can see the slowest nodes within your application. I can drill in and understand why this particular method call is taking 339 milliseconds. Here's another one down here that's also taking some time. And once I'm ready, I can just click Start Debugging. And once again, that IntelliTrace file is going to go back into my source and symbols, and it's going to match that up with the exact line of code, which corresponds to that particular point in time when we capture that IntelliTrace file. We'll just check to see, yes, this one is open now.
Well, let me take some questions in just a minute. We'll be done in just a second.
Yep. And this is the original IntelliTrace file that I captured from SCOM. And here you can see the difference is that because I asked the operational team for that full IntelliTrace file, we're getting the full list of events. So over here at the right-hand side, you can see that if I mouse over, we have a bunch of exceptions that were thrown and caught. I can mouse over and get the full ADO.NET call that was happening when we made a call to our SQL database. And we can really go back in time and understand exactly how we got here.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. All right. So back to slides and we'll wrap up. So as I said, you know, fundamentally what we're trying to do is enable rapid iteration. And we showed you a bunch of capabilities today that are about helping you in the various phases of that iteration. I hope that you're as excited as I am about what we have there. So I wanted to just spend a few minutes talking about Team Foundation Service. As I mentioned at the very beginning in the preamble, most of these capabilities are available on Team Foundation Service today. Go sign up, get yourself an account. We've announced it's free for up to 5 users. We've not yet, we've also said it will be part of your MSDN subscription. We've not yet given more details than that, but expect us to do that before too long. Most of the capabilities, as I say, we've talked about today are already live on the service, and you can try now version control, the code commenting, the work item tagging, the team rooms, agile planning, the feedback management, which has been up there for a while, the agile portfolio management, build, and a bunch of, as I mentioned, improvements to build, the web-based test case management, which keeps getting better with every release, and we, in fact, did make a bunch of improvements that went live today. And then the load testing, which you'll just have to wait till the end of this month to try out. But go try it out, and feedback is more than welcome.
We have a great lineup of sessions for you this week. We just picked a few of our favorites. The one at the top here is the one I mentioned that Darshan's doing later this afternoon. He'll go really deep into the load testing service. He's the program manager owner for that area, so he knows everything about that space. That's at 1:15. Also, unfortunately, at the same time, there's another session by Aaron Bjork and Peter Provost. These guys are kind of known as agilistas on our team, and they're always thinking hard about how do we adopt practices within our own teams. And so well before we showed you things today, our own teams were starting to use a lot of this tooling internally within the developer division and other parts of Microsoft. So that will be really focused on best practices around embracing Agile, with tooling kind of being a backdrop to that story. If you want to learn more about source control improvements and different options you have around Git and Team Foundation version control, Martin Woodward is here. He always gives really great sessions. He has one later today at 3 o'clock. And then Peter is doing another session where he's diving deeper into some of the productivity tools around things like unit testing and fakes. You'll see more about the code information indicators that I showed you earlier. Next slide. So tomorrow, Aaron is also going to be going deeper into the Agile planning tools. And so Brian showed you kind of the out-of-the-box hierarchy that you get with features and backlog items. If you want to customize that to your heart's content, customize Kanban, those are all options for you, and Aaron will be going deeper into that. Next slide. And then I have another session where I'll be going deeper into software testing. So Brian mentioned some of the web-based test case management that we have coming on in 2013. But we really have a great testing solution, whether you're a manual tester, an automated tester, if you want to just set up build, deploy, test workflows, I'll be covering all of that on Wednesday morning. And I think that's it.
Yep. So yeah, don't forget to scan. And so we got 5 minutes. I was going to take a few questions for people who'd like to ask them. So one I heard is, hey, what edition is all of that IntelliTrace stuff in? We've not announced sort of final stories for our 2013 release, but in 2012, that's in Ultimate, and we'll announce later this year kind of what the plan is for 2013. Did we add IntelliTrace for services? What do you mean? The question is IntelliTrace for services, and the answer is we do still require you to stop and start, and for services I know that's a problem, but yeah, we have not changed that yet. Yeah. Will 2013 support round tripping? You mean project round tripping? Will we be able to open projects? Yes. I'm positive that it will support round-tripping to 2012. I think it will support round-tripping to 2010, but I don't remember for sure. We introduced round-tripping in 2012, and we're committed to continue that forward. I expect that at some point we'll say, you know, will in 2019, will we still support 2010? Probably not. And I think we still support 2010. We certainly support 2012. Can Visual Studio 2012 connect to Team Foundation Server 2013 and vice versa? Yes. So we're very, very strong about compatibility. In fact, Visual Studio 2005 can still connect to Team Foundation Server 2013. So all of our clients still work, and vice versa. So Visual Studio 2013 can connect. We go two versions back in that, so to both 2013, 2012, and 2010.
So we expect we'll be able to share some more details about the acquisition and what that means for existing and new customers. Right now, it's not available. Yeah, that's right.
So you can use. So the question is for the business analyst who just wants to use the backlog. Let me set the licensing question aside for a minute. All you have to do is use the web UI. You don't have to install anything. But we have to come back and have a longer conversation about licensing. Yeah. So the question is about SharePoint integration. I didn't hear all of it, but it was about tracking sort of documents in SharePoint against sort of your work in TFS. And the question is, will we plan to do any deeper integration? So we certainly already have a bunch of integration with SharePoint. SharePoint web parts that enable you to expose TFS inside of SharePoint. Document libraries historically exposed in Team Explorer. In terms of smoother integration of URLs, SharePoint URLs into TFS, nothing we've done this release. So certainly interested in feedback on how important that is to people, but nothing in this release. Do we have any plans to support non-Windows builds? So in a sense, I'm going to do the caveat thing. You can today. You could use Jenkins, and we've written the Jenkins plugins to be able to integrate with TFS. So you could do that. We do not yet have our own cross-platform build agent that sort of inherently integrates with TFS build, but that is now kind of at the top of our backlog. So I think sometime later this year we'll start working on it, and I don't know exactly when we'll deliver it, but it is something we plan to do. Yeah, so, yeah, the question was upgrading. Yes, upgrading is incredibly smooth and seamless. You could just do an in-place upgrade. All your data is preserved. Everything should just work. It should not be an issue. Now, you know, always, anytime you're doing anything, I encourage you to take backups and all that kind of stuff. Oh, let me see if there was anything. Yeah, right there. That licensing-wise, we've not settled that yet. So what you, for now, for the short term, you continue to purchase it from InCycle Software, but we'll be working on our integration plan over the next few months, and I'd say this fall we'll have an answer to that question. So the heads-up display you're asking, is that only for .NET? Some of it is. In fact, I'm trying to think, is all of it? Brian might know for sure. Shortly, a lot of that value is .NET only right now. We'll be adding more after that, you know, later. Yeah. Oh, one more question. Absolutely. So the question is, for non-Windows builds, will we be making sure we've got a release management solution for the entirety of my app, including the non-Windows components? You bet. All right, I've got to go. Thank you very much. I've got to run to a Channel 9 session.